world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 226. I'm creator and host Don Hutchison. Every day I interview someone from around the world who has discovered her talents to do work she loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Susan Miner. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Don.
Susan, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Yes.
Good. We want to hear the whole story. Susan Miner, MA, went from posing as a model to serving as a psychology professor and counselor. As an international supermodel, Susan represented such powerhouses as Vogue, Elle, Revlon, and L'Oreal. As president of Beauty from the Inside Out, Susan is a workshop facilitator and counselor. Her expertise as a supermodel and therapist merged into one passion, to raise your inner peace and beauty. Susan's unique approach combines energy healing and traditional psychological techniques. Well, Susan, that's a brief summary of your career. Tell us what you're up to now that has you engaged and excited, if you will.
Well, the two things that have me really excited and engaged are my one-on-one beautiful energy sessions and my beautiful energy model mentoring sessions. And I do them both on Skype. And I'm really enjoying them because it offers me the ability to connect with my clients no matter where they're working or no matter where they live. And I can really see the difference, no matter if they work as a model or something else, because what I focus on mostly is their overall well-being and primarily their anxiety reduction and confidence building.
You do anxiety reduction and confidence building, and you do this with people all over the world, and you've been doing this for how long?
Well, in one form or another, I've been in private practice for about 18 years now.
It was a long time. Well, it must be gratifying.
It's very gratifying. And actually, the older I get, I feel like the more effective I am. I think it's probably just because I've had more experiences and taken myself through some of the things I'm asking my clients to go through.
Mm-hmm. It makes complete sense. So, as you well know, everyone's life is composed of a series of turning points or passages where we face choices and changes and chances and position ourselves again and move forward. Tell our listeners around the world, what are some of the more memorable turning points in your life?
Off the top of my head, I can think of three. And the first one, I was in a swim school when I was about 11, 12 years old. And I went for several summers. And I remember the girls there, and I don't remember specifically their names, but they were like, Susan, you should really be a model. And I had never even thought of that. And there was a modeling school nearby where I lived. And I hounded my mother, I guess, for about 2 months, and she finally let me go. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a turning point.
When they said that to you, did you have any awareness that you had a look or a presence that you could imagine other models have or that you saw in magazines? I mean, how did that land in your ears and in your being?
Well, it's a good question. I wish you could see me. I'm smiling ear to ear because not at all. I mean, I was a kid who, if my socks matched, it was probably a good day. You know, I was kind of a mess, very much a tomboy. And in my house, we didn't really focus that much on looks. You know, so when they told me that, I was quite shocked, yeah.
So you hounded your mother and she took you over to this modeling school. And what happened?
Well, of course, it's not like you had to try out to go. But I went and I was there for, I forget how long, but I ended up being the one and only model that I think ever really made any money there. I started out doing mannequin modeling and I passed out perfume and then I graduated to doing some runway stuff. And it was at one of those runway shows that the company decided to make me their spokesperson and I got a contract for a couple of years and that was really my start.
Oh, that's wonderful. What town were you living in then?
I was living in Hamden, Massachusetts.
Okay. And how old were you when you went from mannequin to perfume to runway before you got the contract?
I was 15.
Oh, my word. That was amazing. What was that like doing that? Did you take to it right away? Was it fun?
It was fun, and I took to it right away. I remember being on the runway and just doing an amazing job, I think. And I don't know, something just clicked. Doing pictures at the beginning, I was really good at it to a certain extent. It's it can be exhausting to have a really happy demeanor and just being on in front of the camera all day, just laughing, you know, how they often want you to appear in pictures. So that part was a little challenging. A million things happened next. You know, I ended up in Boston, New York City, Australia, Paris, Milan, ended up basing myself out of New York City and worked out of there in Paris and Milan for a number of years. When I was 26, I still had agents around the world that booked me. And in a normal week, I might shoot in New York on one day and then fly to Paris overnight on the same day. I would sneak into a studio, shower in the morning in Paris, and then work all day. And then maybe, I don't know, either go back to New York, or sometimes I'd visit friends in Madrid or something if I was close by. But the travel was really tough.
Yes.
And what really began to fray my nerves, though, was the absolute last-minute approach that clients began to implement.
Why was that?
Well, for me, without holding any punches, I think it's disrespect is what it is, because, you know, it wouldn't hurt the clients if the model was rushing the day before to get there. Right. So they would just kind of weigh all their options till the last minute. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's a good question. You know, maybe you'll have to get a client on to ask them that question.
Yeah, why'd you treat these models so badly, client?
And I know it still is going on because of the girls I mentor now. But my agent would call for a job in the afternoon. They'd call me like 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and it would have me scrambling to catch a flight to work across the country the very next morning. This way of booking really became the norm. Like I said, my nerves were frayed, and they were already frayed a bit with my sleeping sensitivities. Well, that's not true. They weren't frayed a bit. They were frayed a lot. I was having a lot of trouble sleeping. I had insomnia. It's hard to go from hotel to hotel. And I felt like I just couldn't go on. So that was really a turning point. It was a defining moment.
Yes.
And I decided to retire.
How old were you?
I was 26.
Okay.
And it was at the height of my modeling career, and that year, and actually the next year when I wasn't even working, where I made the most money in those 2 years of my whole career.
Oh.
And, you know, people thought I was really insane to leave, but I simply packed and moved to my country home. And within a couple of months, I had done that, moved in totally, gotten rid of my apartment in the city, and I enrolled in university.
Okay. What was behind enrolling in university? What were your plans or ideas or fantasies about what you wanted to do next?
Well, that's a great question. I had always been asked and sought out for advice and counsel from my friends or my acquaintances or even strangers. My favorite thing to do always and still is to help people. Mm-hmm. And I read constantly throughout my modeling travels. It became kind of a joke, like, what's Susan reading now? I would get college textbooks, but at this point I was thinking, and I figured I should really study and become qualified so that when people do come to me for advice or counsel, that I'll be qualified to do so.
Mm-hmm. Had you taken college courses during all these years of modeling, like 10 or 12 years of modeling? Had you been taking college courses?
No, but I would go to the bookstores in Manhattan, the college bookstores, and just buy books. So one of my favorite topics was child psychology and early childhood education. At one point, I thought I wanted to be a nursery school teacher.
Oh, what steps did you take to move forward with more education or more coaching?
It was simply a matter of showing up at the university and getting myself enrolled. I remember laughing a little bit. They told me I had to take entrance exams. So, you know, I did that. I brushed up on my algebra and, you know, just got myself into school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So was that fun? Were you excited about it? Were you glad to be off the road?
Oh my gosh. I love school. I hid a bit and didn't tell people really my past life as a model. I literally wore Birkenstocks and enormous overalls and just sat in the front row, and I was totally a geek and loved every minute of it, and ended up getting my graduate degree at the same school. And that's the same place I eventually became a counselor.
My word. That took a handful of years, didn't it?
It did. Well, it took 7 to get through school. And I misspoke. I didn't become a counselor there. I became a professor there. Another turning point happened right after I graduated from the grad school. It was a couple years after I graduated, and I was lost, honestly, Don. I was 35. I had graduated from grad school, undergrad, and I didn't quite know what to do with myself. I was in an interesting position because I didn't have to work for financial reasons, and the jobs that I saw for counselors, you know, they paid $25,000 a year, and I just couldn't comprehend that. And so I was sort of looking around, and my private practice was eking along, and I started to party quite a bit to pass time. Well, we party for different reasons, but I was partying too much, and it became a self-destructive cycle. So I would party, and then it would take me a couple days to recover, and then, of course, I'd be depressed, and then even more lost. So Hence, it makes sense, the depressed cycle. And my solution at that time, I thought I'd just move to an ashram in India. Like, I'm going to sell everything I own. I'm going to move to an ashram in India. I'm going to conquer my fears of being alone or whatever sort of fears I have. And that's what I was going to do. So I asked a girlfriend who...
Wait a minute. You were ahead of Eat, Love, and Pray by a number of years.
Oh, my goodness.
Huh?
That book, oh, my goodness, hit home so much. The eating in Italy, that as well. But that's funny. Yes, I asked a girlfriend who adored India, and she said, you know, Susan, before you go, because I asked her, you know, where should I go? She said, well, before you go, talk to this woman I know. Her name's Sarah, and she's a healer in New York. And she said, you know, she's really good at helping people make these kind of big decisions. It turned out I had met her a year before as well. So I called her up, and this is Sarah. I called up Sarah, the healer, and she recommended that I attend one of her healer's training classes, and I did. I attended it, and that was the turning point for me.
Okay.
It's like I found my ashram. It was in New York. It was about 25 minutes away from me, and during that day, I really found my hope, and I even wrote it down on a card in yellow and orange, just the word hope. And, you know, I turned away from the despair I had found myself in and the self-destruction and began towards the path of a healer and less like a traditionally trained therapist.
Okay. That was very profound. Sarah must be really amazing at what she does.
Yeah, I used to call her the Tiger Woods of healing.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, what happened next?
What happened next? Well, I spent about 4 years going 3 full days a month and becoming her assistant and just learning and processing, doing a lot of process work, cathartic, emotional work, learning how to be a healer, moving energy and the like. And during that time, I became a professor as well. And gosh, a lot happens in that time. Then I became pregnant. I got my daughter in right towards the end. I gave birth to her just before my 39th year. When I say the end, women know what that means. You know, like the clock was a ticking. That's what happened after that. And now I have a lovely 8-year-old daughter.
Oh, how wonderful. What a wonderful story. As you know, life is hard. Okay. So the statistics on people finding their sweet spot around the world is just a small percentage, under 15 to 20%. Actually under 15%. And even in this country, it's maybe 20% at best. What is it about the process of chiseling out our lives on this planet that's so difficult that causes so many people not to find their true calling or use their best talents and abilities and work in sync with themselves? What is that?
Once again, another good question. I think, Don, that it has to do with perspective. And we do all have a purpose. Mine is to help people emotionally. Yet I realize I can do this no matter what I'm doing for a living. So, for example, I can unofficially help people emotionally, even at a photo shoot, if I'm working now as a model. And I think we forget that as a whole. I think often a person's purpose is a quality that they possess instead of a specific job or career.
Yes.
We forget that our purpose has to do with who we are as a person, a specific gift or quality that we have that is a gift to the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a person could be a natural encourager, and that really could be their purpose. They might not hang a shingle that says natural encourager, you know, for sale by the hour, but their, you know, their gift of their encouragement can be expressed in any profession. I have a good friend he's a photographer. He happens to be an amazing photographer. His name's Danny Cardozo. But really, I think his purpose is to be a major encourager. You could be an accountant and be an encourager, a restaurant owner. Anywhere where you're coming into contact with other people is your opportunity to fulfill your purpose.
Yes. Why does the system pull us away from ourselves, it seems? Do we just get locked into the, you know, the process as students and getting into companies or professions, and we just don't take enough time to think or feel, which is more like it probably?
Maybe. I also think we're not guided in this. It's not told to us. Well, on one hand, we're told, do what you love and the money will follow.
Right.
And we're also told, follow your bliss or do it, you know, all those things. But we're not given the perspective, like I mentioned, of, well, your gifts and your talents express them everywhere. So if a person's expressing their talents just anywhere they go, it doesn't matter what job they're in. And the ironic part is they'd be more apt to find themselves in a job or career that more suits their purpose.
I couldn't agree more. So what aspects of your life have been most profoundly affected by you taking this path? Certainly the road less traveled, because most people that had your talents in modeling would have done it and kept on doing it. And you made a real seismic shift and got into a whole other field and then kept growing and changing. So what have been the greatest benefits?
Well, you know, there's several aspects that are affected by me being a counselor. And one somewhat negative and kind of personal, but I'll share it, and one's quite positive. I'll start with the negative one. In hindsight, a negative aspect was in intimate relationships, one in particular that I'm thinking of. As a counselor, for myself and other counselors, compassion is a very crucial quality. But I believe at a certain point, our compassion to a partner or with a partner can be taken too far. And what I mean by that is I put up with too much lying, broken promises, passive-aggressive treatment, and I thought I was being compassionate to him. And in fact, it kind of backfired. You know, being compassionate to someone doesn't mean that you allow hurtful behavior,
right,
and allow your feelings to get hurt because you're compassionate for their pain.
Right.
So there's that. And then, you know, the lesson, I did take a lesson out of that is that, and I knew this before, but of course you have to learn it yourself, is that we can't be a boyfriend or a girlfriend's therapist.
Right.
It doesn't work.
Right. Absolutely doesn't work. How would you boil down a few lessons or takeaways, whether they're, I always say this, whether they're 18 or 80, whether they're heading off into the world, school, or just heading into the world like you did, or whether they're, you know, retired and looking to get the next 10 or 15 years of their life to maximize their connection and their worth and their beingness?
Well, I mentioned it already, but the most powerful lesson I've learned is to bring our talents and then our gifts and our purpose everywhere we go. And we can choose to feel our purpose, like you mentioned, to really think about it and apply it no matter where we are, right here, right now. You know, I always remember Eckhart Tolle, he talks about our power is in the present moment, and that's the only moment we have. So if we bring our purpose to now, anything we're doing, and it's not some future time our purpose isn't. It's not when we're in the perfect career or we get all of our schooling. We can use our gifts and our purpose at the grocery store, and we can use it at a yoga class or our kids' baseball games. We can use it everywhere. So the lesson is don't wait.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Eckhart Tolle. I think he's nailed so many issues about being present. And today it's harder than ever to do that, isn't it?
There's a lot to distract us.
Yes. So books. Are there books or there resources that you like that you could recommend?
Well, I mentioned Eckhart, and I love the book A New Earth. I would like The Power of Now, but I find myself reading A New Earth again and again. An oldie but incredible goodie is You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay.
Yes.
And I really like Energy Medicine by Donna Eden and Return to Love by Marianne Williamson. And, you know, I also listen to them on YouTube. You know, we're so lucky that we can listen to them for free.
YouTube's amazing, isn't it?
I love it.
Speaking of YouTube and the internet, what tools or resources on the internet do you like that you make use of?
You know, I'm going to sound redundant, but YouTube.
Okay.
Honestly, YouTube is amazing. I put on Eckhart or Louise Hay and put it on when I'm making breakfast or getting ready or doing the laundry. And then I can extract little nuggets of wisdom. And I also use it as a reminder to be present. And I need lots of reminders, Dawn. You know, 1,000 times. And
I know, me too.
Yeah. So, and I also encourage my clients to do that. I have a YouTube channel myself that, you know, my clients can do anxiety reduction techniques in between sessions, or sometimes if, you know, they can't get in a session right away, I'll send them there as well, just to give them a little boost.
Yeah, excellent. So what do you see happening in the life of Susan Miner in the next handful of years? What's your personal vision going forward?
My personal vision, Don, I see myself as a spokesperson and a workshop facilitator, and it's for a company that is a girl empowering company. And I see myself facilitating groups of girls and women to reduce their anxiety and to raise their confidence, really bringing, you know, the beauty from the inside out. You know, anxiety is an epidemic in America.
Yes.
For girls, and there's simple and effective ways to stop it. You know, it's free, really. Energy work is free. And once I can teach someone how to do it, they can always do it. And I really want to share these exercises and techniques with them. And, you know, my presence as someone who's gone through it and I've come out the other end, you know, because it breaks my heart to see and hear about all the suffering of the anxieties that people are going through.
I just read the other day in some national magazine that, tell me if I got this right, that 1 out of 3 women in this country in the course of their lives are going to have some kind of abuse.
I thought it was 1 in 4, but you know, it's probably is.
It's high.
Mm-hmm. And abuse comes these days as well, even social media abuse.
Oh, yes.
Sort of thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There are people that have taken their own lives because of the bludgeoning they took in social media from somebody that was just attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible. Yes. Moving from that dismal fact to a hopeful fact, what are you proudest of at this point of your life?
I am proudest. That's interesting. I'm proudest that I made the transition from a model to being a counselor. And I'm proudest of, you know, my working as being the best mom I can be. I'm quite proud of getting to 47 and in such good shape emotionally and even physically. And I can be really proud of myself when I'm working. Honestly, it fills me up so much. So I'm proud of that as well.
Susan Miner, a great pleasure being with you today. We so much appreciate you sharing the highlights of your remarkable life journey. And I know that listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. So how do those listeners connect with you?
Many ways. I'm all over social media. It's Susan Miner Beauty on Facebook, Susan_Miner on Twitter. I'm on Instagram at Susan Miner. Also, my website is Susan Miner Beauty. So you're getting the pattern here, right?
Yes.
Anyway you want to to connect with me. You can. I take personal emails as well, and I answer questions from people around the world. I'm happy to do that. And yeah, it's real easy these days.
Yeah, that's wonderful. What a brand. Congratulations. Listeners know that you can go to discoveryourtalentpodcast.com and go to the podcast section, of course, and find Susan's illuminating interview and the highlights of the interview you can read, but you can also connect with these links. I want to thank listeners across the world for joining us today. We have a, as you've heard me say many times in the last 8 months, we have an ebook, What Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed, 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love, which are based on the thinking of the pioneering men and women that have been career planning experts and philosophers for generations. Great feedback on this. So take advantage of it if you will. It's free. Just go to our website. You can also subscribe free, of course, to this daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like the content and the interviews, we'd love for you to be a part of our tribe and tell us how we can serve you. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.